unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure. And today is Saturday, January 10th, where we are.
January 10th of 2015, no less.
2015. No, that obviously you're in error there, because 2015...
is the future.
Is the year in Back to the Future when they have flying cars.
Right.
And your skateboards, and hoverboards and such. So this couldn't be 2015, obviously, because, I mean... Mr. McFly knows these things.
Right.
And anyone who watched Back to the Future knows that in 2015, the Japanese...
We're supposed to speak Japanese.
Right, the Japanese have taken over everything, and we have flying cars, and we fly in to and from work, and cool, you know, and we have the walls in our houses are TV screens. Wait a minute.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
The walls in our houses are TV screens. Oh, okay, well, maybe it is almost 2015.
Not only that, here's what's more. And well, we have to say who we are and all that.
We
good
have
stuff,
to say who we are.
Yes, but
I'm me. Who
Bill,
are you?
Bill Gates just announced a big initiative that they're the group that he's working with and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have set up this sewage waste processing plant that produces electricity and clean water. So you put waste in, human waste, into this thing.
And a lot of water.
No.
Well, the water, it's coming through the sewer system, so you...
Right, the water is also going through.
So basically, you mix it with a bunch of water.
Right, and that's going through. And then it produces clean water, and these are the only byproducts, and ash, as well as producing quite a lot of energy, electricity, which can be fed back into the grid.
I think that
that's pretty close to what they had in Back to the Future.
Well, I think that's a vast improvement over solar power or wind power.
Yes, because, human power.
Yeah, the human waste is a continuous issue, and
right.
it doesn't go away in the dark.
As we like to say, we're full of it.
Yes. Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach is not only a radio presentation, da-da-da, it is also... the name of a investment advisory firm registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, headquartered, or hindquartered as the case may be, in Salado, Texas. Yay!
All right, so...
and the crowd cheered.
We've given our disclosure.
Yeah.
There we go.
Do you feel disclosed?
Yeah, it's kind of cold out for being this disclosed, actually.
Well, did anything happen this week?
Yes.
Good.
That's all.
All right.
Right.
Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 0.54%.
That is correct. It ended the week at 17,737.37.
And the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index was down 0.65%.
At 2,044.81.
And the NASDAQ was down 0.48%.
At 4,704.07.
Okay, now I'm going to hit you with one. And the Barron's 400 was down 0.95%.
I don't track Barron's.
Well, that was at 533.34. At least I knew something, you
know. Well, you're just reading things now. See, I don't feel all that...
You didn't memorize
large
it?
...large an inclination towards Barron's.
Oh,
just,
well...
You know, you read Barron's, and I read other things.
You read Yahoo, right?
I read Yahoo... I do. There's a whole series of things. It's a bunch of science articles. And
bunch. That's bunch. The crucial word.
It's
bunch.
A scientific term.
Yes.
Bunches.
Yes, and generally applies to bananas and grapes.
One other thing that happened.
Which applies to us.
I also check Drudge Report.
You do?
Yeah, and it's quite humorous because Drudge Report takes an already magnified headline. So whatever newspaper or publication that they're getting their headlines, their stories from, have these headlines on them that are pretty eye-grabbing to begin with. And Matt Drudge makes those even bigger, makes them even more. And basically, yesterday all day, he had a not smiley face, not happy face, little emoji, emotion, it's like a yellow-faced thing. And it just had this flat line for the mouth because... the report came out on unemployment. And unemployment was down, but payroll pay
was down.
And so he's got this look on it. But he missed some things there.
Yes.
As is normal, because he's not an economist. Pay was down for December.
But it was up for November.
It was up for the year quite drastically. So,
well, I wouldn't call it drastic.
1.7% compared to what we've seen in the last decade, that's pretty drastic.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. It was up 1.7%, and I completely concur, which was almost exactly the same amount that inflation for stuff that people buy other than food and gasoline.
And electronics.
And so the issue is that effectively wages remained flat.
For the year, yes.
And some places they went up and some places they went down.
However,
which is
while,
why the guy's mouth was flat,
yes,
I guess.
While wages remained flat, we hired a lot more people. So, I mean, that's the big thing. If you look at the number of millions, we've hired about 2.4 million people last year. That's pretty cool. That's a big deal. Now,
I think that's very important, yes.
Wrap that all up, there's still a problem.
What?
There's still some problems in there. We've got lots of room to grow. Yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't seen the kind of workforce participation ratio that we're seeing now.
Well, it's the same as it was in 1977.
Right. Exactly. And that workforce participation ratio, for those of you that aren't total geeks, is...
And for those who are, too.
Even those that are total geeks, you can hear this as well.
It's actually in percentages, but yeah.
Yeah, is a... it's the number of people of working age that are working. We've had people leave work early for early retirement and not come back. We've also had quite a lot of one of the members of a dual-earning family not working anymore. Now, having said that, we have more people employed today than we did before the Great Recession.
Now you're confusing the issue.
Yes. Wait a minute.
The number of workers is down, but there's more of them.
Right. There's more. So this is where statistics get really silly. The reality of it is we've got more people working today than before the recession, but we also have more people than we had before the recession. So as a percentage, the number of people as a percentage of the population working is smaller.
Well, there's a, you know, and really I've been thinking about that and doing a little anecdotal research. I can't survey the entire economy and I...
Why not?
Sometimes wonder...
You can just assume things.
I do know that there's a great deal of debate, for example, over, you know, which inflation rate to use. There's about 20 now. There was one that came out today that the Fed likes to use, which is the 5-year break-even rate.
Right.
Which I kind of like, you know, but it's getting pretty esoteric when you have a five year break even rate and you're using that for inflation. Try to explain, you know, I had trouble understanding it, but it seems like a really good inflation rate. Anyway, the thing that I was thinking about was if you, and this is because we know people, I know people, and clients who have this situation where there were two. Back in the time when everything was much more, at least perceived as being much more healthy in the economy, just before we realized it wasn't, who both worked. Two people. And they had a couple of kids. And the kids were in some form of daycare or something. They had somebody else employed.
You need to get those kids jobs.
Well, the kids, they had someone else employed as a result of them. So we had two employees in the family and at least a low-level third one partially in being employed because of the fact somebody had to take care of the kids.
Right.
Well, now one of them is employed. The other one takes care of the kids. Well, that doesn't just take one person out of the workforce. That takes about probably 1.07 people out of the workforce because they no longer have somebody else that they pay either through a daycare center or a nanny or depending on what level of income they're at, there's somebody else they're not paying to take care of those kids. And the I'm not sure whether it was a public circus announcement or or advertisement for AARP that was on just before the program started, where the woman was talking about taking care of her father. We're getting a lot of that in the economy, too, and that doesn't count as an employed person. So if you had a two-income family and there is a parent who needs a lot of assistance but can't afford to hire somebody, or the family emotionally just doesn't want to hire somebody to do this. They want the daughter, let's say in this case, really believes that she needs to be the responsible person who quits her job.
The daughter?
In this particular case, in the commercial, it was a female voice saying that she was taking care of her father.
Ah, yes. Gotcha.
So the adult person who is the daughter of the older person in this commercial was taking care of her father, whereas in a more economically booming time, or, and this is something we've been talking about, when families had a larger debt load.
Yeah.
She might have continued to work and put him in a nursing home.
Yeah, and that's this is the other kind of twist here. Because our overall debt load is less in the United States now than it was. So all those numbers that I gave earlier.
So we're debt load less?
Our overall consumer debt is lower now than it was before the recession.
And it went down in November and December. Did you hear that?
Yeah. And that's part of the reason. It's just past the point now where we have less debt than we did as far as credit cards. And this is, again, with more people in the population.
Mm-hmm.
We have less debt. The pay level is about the same. The debt level is lower.
And
mm-hmm.
the price of gasoline just went down.
Yes, this is a good thing.
About a third.
When you start putting together all the pieces of the puzzle, one of the most frustrating things about being an economist is the economy keeps changing the pieces of the puzzle just when you get a good picture figured out.
That's
why
you
start putting, you've got all these pieces, all right, this is the piece that finishes the puzzle, and then half of the puzzle changes, and you go, oh, wait a minute,
well,
come back here.
That's the reason it changes. You see, it's the Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. The act of observation changes the thing observed.
Right. So as we're looking at this puzzle of the economy, I am still seeing a very good-looking picture. It hasn't changed at all from that. There are new things that make it actually look a little bit better than it did before.
Now, are you just looking at a selfie?
Oh, no. No, those are ugly. I look at my selfies and I'm...
Actually, you've been...
It's how I lost my hair, looking at myself.
You've been posting some very good-looking pictures of a person that you hang out with.
Oh, that's my wife.
That's a very different
issue. So, looking at our economy, it's not as... I have to say our economy is not as pretty as my wife.
Yeah, but your economy is growing.
That is true.
Dramatically.
Is true. So when we look at the rest of the world, however, there are some nice-looking points out there and a lot of really ugly things happening. The rest of the world is...
Ugly.
Ugly. Britain's not doing too badly.
That's where the village of ugly was.
Right, it was actually. Yeah. Was in Britain. Germany looks pretty good. Russia looks horrible. Belarus yesterday just raised its interest rate to 25%.
And that's Belarus translates into beautiful Russia.
Yes. They just, a week and a half ago, signed a free trade agreement with Russia, which Russia immediately violated.
So what else is new?
Right. Russia said, yes, you and the beautiful and prosperous nation of Kazakhstan have joined our free trade block.
And
it's a block now. These three countries are a block.
Oh, it's a block.
Yes, it's a free trade block. And they were trying to get Ukraine to join, which was part of the reason why the whole issue is going on in Ukraine, is that the former president of Ukraine decided to pull out of a nearly decade-long procedure to become part of the European Union to overnight sign the trade block agreement with Russia and said, I'm going to do this. The people said, no, you're not. We voted for this free trade with European Union to get together with them. And that led to people protesting on the streets. And then that led to him having snipers shoot people that were protesting on the streets. And then that led to the people protesting on the streets to being really upset and chasing him out of the country into Russia, which led to Russia invading Crimea.
And the rest of Ukraine, too.
And chunks of the rest of Ukraine.
Right.
Yes,
right.
And saying, well, that's that's not us, really.
That's because Russia is peace-loving.
Yes, they love
want
a piece
of Ukraine.
A piece of Ukraine, a piece of Belarus.
Latvia, yeah.
So Belarus signed their agreement with Russia at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And during the sanctions that the Western countries put on Russia, they said, you know, we're going to be messing with your finance. Well, Russia turned around. Putin said, okay, we're not going to buy any more food products from you guys, which hasn't been a really great idea to begin with. But he said this.
It's part of a hunger strike.
Right. Well, exactly. Yes. He said, I'm not going to buy any more food. Nobody in Russia is going to buy any more food from Europe or the United States.
Right. And the Belarusians being really Belarusians?
Belarusians.
The Belarusians being good entrepreneurs.
Oh, well, we'll buy it for you. We'll go to Europe and buy the stuff and sell it to you at a higher price.
Yes.
So the Russians, who have now signed this free trade agreement, said, no, we don't have free trade with you, even though they have it on paper. That didn't help the Ukrainians not get invaded when they had a nice piece of paper that said the Russians wouldn't be touching them. But, you know,
it's... Well, Vladimir is a guy who... Vladimir Putin.
Right.
Is a guy who probably is a physicist at heart. Because, you know, one way to solve all the problems of unification theory to get everything together, which is what he wants, by
unified
the way,
field theory.
Unified field theory is if you simply eliminate the concept of time.
Yeah.
That the past doesn't exist.
Right.
And you eliminate time, and all of a sudden physics becomes a lot more simple.
Well, I mean, you're talking about gravity waves at that point.
Right,
if
right.
you can develop a way of...
But you just eliminate time. And so if you eliminate time, the past doesn't exist.
Well, this is interesting. I told you I'm reading a lot of science stuff. Well,
what I'm trying to say is this is Putin, Vladimir Putin's way he works.
Right.
He signed that free trade agreement and that non-invade Ukraine agreement.
He didn't actually sign that.
Well, I mean, his country did. But see, that was in the past, so it didn't exist.
Oh, yes.
So it doesn't count.
Right. Obviously, it doesn't count.
Okay. I mean, it's just physics, see?
Yeah. There's a neutron star that we've been watching. There's two neutron stars. They're orbiting each other, and the world's been watching, or a very, very, very small percentage of the world. Very, very small percentage of the world has been watching, and other people have been reading papers written by these people, and obviously not a very large
watching
person. Watching two neutron stars orbiting each other.
Yes.
And... we were looking at the effects of gravity on, and you know, there's all these experiments going on there trying to measure gravity waves, which we've got to some extent.
Because they really should be generating gravity waves if they're rotating around each
other. Right, and they are, and we can see the effects, but they've just disappeared.
The two neutron stars?
Yes. To our vision, they have disappeared because they have created a gravity wave that is also a wave in space-time.
Mm-hmm.
And that wave has got stars.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool. They've bent the fabric of the universe so that what we're looking at a long time ago before they were there.
Yes, and this is the point. Putin believes this stuff.
Oh,
it applies.
Yeah, it applies directly to Ukraine and...
Yeah, and he also has another dictum when it comes to the law, and that is possession is 9 points of the law.
9 points? Is it 9%?
Well, it's theoretically
90%?
It's called like 90%, but they called nine of 10 points of the law has to do with possession.
Right. Well, Putin definitely likes possessions.
Yes, and he wants peace.
Yes, lots of pieces.
So that's the news for the week. Anything else happened during the week?
He's also interested in what's going on, for instance, with the Hadron Collider. What you do if you want to study something is you...
Slam into it.
Slam into it really hard.
Break
it into little pieces and then look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So he's doing quite well with that.
Okay. Well, by the way, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, in case you were wondering who it is that's rambling on about who can switch from European economics to neutron stars without a sign of a segue and consider them to be both the same subjects. But if you'd like to ask us some questions that have something to do with economics or investments or something of that ilk. We collectively and individually have both a lot of education and a lot of experience in how to screw things up.
Very proud of that experience.
I think I'm this is my 33rd year.
It's my 24th.
33rd year in doing this. If you want to call in here and make comments or questions or whatever, 773-1400 is the telephone number in East Bell County, presuming, again, that this is January 10th, 2015.
Last month.
Wait a minute. You got to give the other number.
Oh, yeah. So the other number is 1-866-597-1400.
But that was also true last month. But last month was also last year. So
correct.
Be careful.
Last month, the amount of oil that we imported into the country was the lowest since the 1970s.
Well, and I don't think there's any coincidence there that you have to go back to 1977 to find a labor participation rate at the level we have it today.
There's one other piece. You've
got to
put these two pieces together.
This is a back to the future past.
Sort of, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so part of the reason that we haven't imported so much oil recently is very crude, is because we're producing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason is because the West Coast has a bunch of dock workers that are on strike.
Right, but they're not dock tours.
No, not dock tours.
You
they
would
are
think
dock
that somebody
workers.
Who worked on a dock would be a dock tour.
They are dock-ors.
Dock-ors.
Yes, dockers. They are dock workers.
But they're not working, so...
They're not workers.
And then this is a little problem.
They're
because
not workers.
If they're on strike, and they are, and they're not working on the docks...
That adds to the labor participation rate problem. It keeps the unemployment rate slightly higher, and it lowers the amount of imports that we get from oil. So these are distorting effects,
but
just like gravity waves from neutron stars.
It's also lowering a lot of other imports. In
yes.
But this
very
is,
frustrating.
But it has at least a secondary effect.
And exports, for that matter.
Air freight is hitting world records.
Right.
Because people are flying stuff in, so it doesn't have to go through
the
ports.
There are people going to the East Coast and shipping down through Panama to get to the Pacific when we could put it on the rails and get it to the West Coast. People have goods in the West Coast that they're shipping by rail to the East Coast or to the Gulf of Mexico so that they can be shipped down south to Panama, back through the Panama Canal, and then up north and then over to Asia.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good for all kinds of people in the middle that get paid for this, but it's not so good for the people that are trying, where our prices are already higher in foreign countries because our dollar is stronger. You throw in an extra bunch of this stuff, this isn't a good thing. This is an issue that, you know, there is a clash of concepts going on here.
Yeah, the dock workers are complaining that they are dramatically underpaid.
Right.
They only average $150,000 a year
exactly.
for working on the docks.
This is the clash of concepts. You knew exactly where I was going with this.
We have been going together places for
very long time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back when you first didn't have hair, and then when you did have hair, and now
I don't
have hair again.
Right.
Yeah.
Now I have the hair on my face instead of on my head. Yes.
Yes. Right.
Anyway, the dock workers who are, as you said, on average making very large six-figure salaries are claiming that they are not employed at a high enough rate because it's a very highly skilled job that they have.
Yeah.
Some of them actually do have highly skilled jobs. Most of them do not.
Yeah. Most of them.
Most of them are day laborers.
Well, they labor consistently for the same company. It's not so much a day. But.
Well, they work during the day.
But they're consistently employed.
Yes, they have one job
that
they go to every day. And they manually pick up things and put them down, or they drive a forklift, or the ones that are being paid properly are the ones that are driving those huge crane things that drop the containers on the right spot without destroying the entire ship or the other cargo that's on there.
Right, and they get paid a lot more than
$150,000. Yes, they do. But the idea that they are striking, which is slowing down the trade of the whole half of the country going exporting, and the imports have been slowed way down, We had a drop in exports and a drop in imports last month, which is silly. Basically, this is legal blackmail.
Right. That's what unions do.
And if you think about blackmail for a second, this is one of those strange crimes that if I know something about you and I say, I'm going to tell the world, that's completely legal. If I know something about you and I say to you, I'm going to tell the world unless you give me money, that's not legal. But when a union...
No, that's lawyers.
That's lawyers. But when a union does the same thing, that's legal. And it's not tell the world. It's just, I'm not going to do anything until you... And not only that, no one else is allowed to do this either because we have a law in place that says anybody that does this kind of work has to be part of our union, whether right. they like it or not.
Right. But that's California.
Yeah. Kentucky has a thing that's just happened there. This is not a segue. This is actually the same conversation. Kentucky is passing a law that is putting in the hands of the local communities for government employees the right-to-work concept. And right-to-work states are not liked very well by unions. Unions look at this and say, you don't have the right to work unless you're in a union. If you're in a union, right. you have a right to work.
Right.
Otherwise, no, you don't. And the Republicans are saying, no, if you want to work, you should be able to work. We have good labor laws now. Unions have been important in our past, but we have good labor laws now. You don't need to be able to shut down the entire company when you have a disagreement. You should have one-on-one conversations about each person's pay. Well, somewhere in the middle is probably where we should be. And in the process of doing this, the unions in Kentucky, particularly the teachers' unions, are really upset, and they are threatening to stop teaching the kids of Kentucky, which I don't want to say any jokes about the education level in Kentucky, but maybe they stopped a long time ago.
Yeah, well, I could go into
that. Yeah, we're going to get deep here.
We're going to break for commercials and let our brains cool down a little bit. You're certainly welcome to
give
us
the window.
A call and interrupt our reverie and ask us questions or make comments. Telephone number's in here, presuming that it's January 10th, 2014.
2015.
Yes, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone numbers in here haven't really changed, even though they were issued at a different time, and Vladimir Putin says that anything that's printed in the past doesn't apply.
Correct.
And it's 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County.
It's otherwise 1-866-597-1400.
And I wanted to address something, if I might.
That okay. Is it a letter?
No. It's Gettysburg.
Oh.
It's called the Gettysburg Address.
Okay.
Now, what I wanted to talk about was some input we have gotten from members of the public, both clients and non-clients, about their portfolio's performance in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of news media reports, and we commented too on the fact that the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 both were breaking records day after day after day towards the end of the year. And we get a sense when we hear that kind of thing that, okay, my portfolio then should be up. I mean, if the S&P 500 was up 12% for the year, then actually it wasn't, but my portfolio ought to be up 12% for the year, too. And then when you come back and you see a really, really low number on your gains for the year, you're probably going to be disappointed. And more importantly, if you got into the market, let's say you invested somewhere and you had a well-diversified, well-positioned portfolio based on the long term, and I've looked at a lot of the theory and the actual theory, gone back and put this together, and you've done so in May, your return through the end of the year would have been about zero actually it's zero plus whatever income your portfolio generated. The return for the entire year in a well-allocated, well-balanced, conservative portfolio. And by conservative, I mean, 50 to 60% in equities of different kinds and 40 to 50% in things that are designed to protect you rather than enhance your growth. And a lot of retired people particularly are in the position, or people who are taking income, are in the position where they should have and do have a fairly conservative portfolio, a balance, what we call a balanced portfolio or a moderate portfolio. Well, for starters, when you start off the year with only 40, 50, 60% of your portfolio in something that's supposed to grow, and then you don't have 100% of that in the same large cap growth stocks that dominate the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones Industrial Average right now, you're not going to see anything like the return in 2014 that the Dow or the S&P 500 got. And that's sometimes hard for people to get their minds around. As a matter of fact, if you have a well-diversified portfolio by any definition I know of, long-term, in that portfolio last year was going to be some participation outside of the United States. The vast majority of equities, for example, in the world aren't in the United States or outside the United States. And it smooths out the ride over the long term, what we've seen, if in a given portfolio there are non-U.S. companies, non-U.S., in other words, funds or mutual funds that invest outside of the United States. Well, it's a harsh reality, but folks, the fact that the dollar rose so much, which enables tourists to go overseas and spend their money more freely because it buys more stuff, the fact that the euro, for example, dropped from about 160 to less than 120 last year means that even if you were invested in a profit, let's say you had an overseas mutual fund and the companies in there all rose in value in their local markets last year, your overseas mutual fund probably showed a loss for the year. Why? Well, because the dollar rose, and it's denominated here in the United States in dollars, but the companies are denominated in other stuff like the euro.
Right. Or and the baht or any number of other foreign currencies.
There's bots or yachts or
foreigners over there using their different stuff for money.
Or Yemeni or something like that. Anyway, what I wanted to say is that if you have – there's lots of reasons for looking at the methodology or the person that is dealing with your portfolio that are valid reasons, like whether there are a fiduciary willing to say, yes, I'm a fiduciary and sign a statement to that effect, or whether they're in fact trying to generate large profits for somebody other than you, that's probably the single biggest one. The other one is competency. Is the person certified and competent, and do they know what they're doing? B, are they ethically, morally, and legally working for you or for somebody else? Those are the two big questions. But right now, this is going to be sound a little odd, but I've actually had some people approach me in communication saying, my broker really stinks because I only got this return last year or the last 6 months of the year, and I know the market was up. We're looking at you, and I come back, and they give me enough information, and I say, well, really, you know, there's lots of good reasons to switch, but your performance wasn't one of them. Because if you invested in, for instance, this is a fascinating thing. If you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average about mid-May, and you look at the same Dow Jones Industrial Average at the end of the year when it was breaking records, you'll discover it was a whopping 1% higher than it was in May. And, of course, the issue is the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the S&P 500 or something can go up 1/100th of a percent above its previous level, and it just broke a record. But it would have to do that 100 times in a row to get 1% above the record that it broke. So it's just something to be aware of. And a lot of people have trouble, and we're at this point in the economic cycle, you're going to see this. You're probably going to feel it. If you had a well-balanced, well-allocated portfolio between 2009 and the present, 2009 through 2013, you were probably quite pleased with your returns. Why? Well, because, generally speaking, a well-allocated portfolio doesn't go down as far. That's no guarantee, but generally they don't go down as far as a more aggressive portfolio. And they tend to come up out of a panic quicker. But there is a transition point between recovery and expansion. These are not official terms. Recovery is technically, of course, when the GDP on the economic levels, when the GDP gets back to the level it was before it started down, well, we passed that a long time ago. But when we look at the returns in the market, we look at the general attitude in the economy, a lot of people really feel like we're still partially in the recession, and they're right. Many aspects of our economy are still in the Great Recession. We are reaching that peculiar point, though, where we transition from a recovery out of a panic, during which we see outsized gains, to the expansion as we rise above where we started in this mess. During that period, historically, what we've seen is a bunch of seesaw activity. We've seen certain aspects, for instance, of the investment markets going up while others are going down. And there's a lot of indecision about where do we go from here, because we're transitioning from a recovery to a better future. And I say better future, even though a lot of people think, well, maybe the future won't be better. The fact is, as Jake was pointing out and as we discussed on here, the United States economy is in good enough shape. It has come off life support. And remember when there was a panic because the Fed might stop buying bonds? Well, they stopped buying bonds. Now they're talking about starting to raise interest rates next year. And by the way, there is no consensus, at least on the Fed, as to when that will happen.
By next year, you actually mean this year.
This year, yeah.
That's not next year anymore. This is next year. The future is now. We're talking.
Very confusing.
There's no consensus, but I'm thinking June.
Yeah, but we don't know. And as a matter of fact, several members of the Fed have said there is no specific time frame set. We're going to have to watch the data, and the fact that the average pay per hour dropped probably will slow down that process. But the issue here is that we are in a transition period right now where there's a lot of uncertainty. For example, there is no question in the long term, when we look at history, that a 50% drop in the price of oil produces a higher market value a year later, 5 years later.
Right.
There is no question that it produces more money for consumers to spend.
Yeah, I mean,
and yet the market is afraid of it.
Yeah, if you think about this just for a second, people think of this as a really complex issue, and it really isn't. If you take a step back and you say, all right, at the workplace of your average person, whether it's industrial or whatever, we get energy from fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
We either use it to power a foundry or to light the lights above the cubicle.
Right.
Or the computer that's sitting at the cubicle.
Mm-hmm.
If those prices go down, there's more money in the pockets of the business.
And there's more money in the pockets of the employees because they don't have to pay so much for gasoline.
Right, when they're going to and from work. So if you think of it on a scale of shipping across the country, or you think of it on a scale of flying people across the country, prices are going to come down.
Mm-hmm.
Other areas, prices come down as well. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about shipping things into the country, the price of shipping is part of the price that you pay for when you go to Best Buy or Walmart. When you're looking at an item, part of that price has to do with the expense of getting it to the store, and that's going down. So there's going to be more money in people's pockets, and things are going to be less expensive. So this is really a good incentive for growth. These are the sorts of things when we see that. If I see money in people's pockets going down at the same time as the prices at the store going down, that's bad. If I see prices going up at the same rate that people's money in the pockets go up, that's bad.
That's neutral.
That's neutral. It's not something that's something we've actually seen recently, is prices coming down at the same rate as pay or prices going up at the same rate as pay. What we're seeing now is that prices are going to come down and there's going to be more money in the pocket to buy with.
Right, which because there's more people working.
Right, so you've got more people working.
And lower cost of fuel.
Lower cost of fuel, lower cost of transportation, lower cost of electricity. That means lower cost for garbage pickup. That means lower cost for almost everything in the chain. It just takes a while for it to spread around.
So here's what people are afraid of. Here's what the traders on the market in the short term are afraid of. They're afraid of what would be probably relatively minor hits to earnings in the United States, which would see as really scary.
Right.
And they could come from a couple of areas. First off, inflation, and this is the way it was put, inflation in the Eurozone year over year for 2014 was a negative number.
That's called deflation.
Well, they don't use the term deflation yet.
That's panic starting.
Right.
They've also called it disinflation.
And they
just silly.
Right. Well, because deflation is a state of mind, and the problem, of course, is that when they do a survey of consumers in Europe, they realize that, and this was a recent survey that was just published by the European Central Bank. Apparently, Europeans are right on the cusp of believing profits will fall into the indefinite future. I mean, not profits, but prices will fall. And when they start believing that,
that's when deflation kicks in.
Right. That is deflation, because then people defer buying things because they'll be cheaper in the future. Well, employers can't afford to keep their employees on board while no one's buying anything, so they lay people off. So there's less money to buy things, which means they have to lower prices further, which puts us in what's called a deflationary spiral, where eventually enough people start getting laid off. And by the way, this is already in place in Spain, Italy, and Greece, Portugal, possibly happening in France now, where they have a large enough unemployed group and people being laid off that there is a fear of economic loss that causes people to stop spending money. So
that's right in the middle of this. Over the change of the year, the French upper tax bracket went away. That upper tax bracket of 75%, basically above a certain amount, any dollar or in your case the euro that you made, 75% of it went to the government, which caused the tax revenue to drop drastically.
Mm-hmm. Proving that Arthur Laffer was right.
Yes. When you tax something so much that people don't even want to make it, you lose revenue.
Right.
If you tax something enough that keeps the incentive to people to make more, then you get more money. And if you tax it so low that you don't get anything, you get less money. So there, somewhere in the middle is the sweet point, and that sweet point keeps moving around. But Holland comes in as a socialist.
Holland is a country.
Oh, excuse my French.
Yes.
You see what I did there? Oh.
Your French stinks.
Yes. So he comes in and he says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tax the rich people. Well, a lot of rich people left.
Yes, they did.
Because you're in the European Union, and that means you don't get penalized for moving to another country anymore.
You know that Sean Connery left England because the tax was so high and moved to France.
Right. Well, he went to Spain.
He went to Spain?
Yeah, he went to Spain.
Oh, okay, good. Well, he's smarter then. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so the French now, that tax went away. I expect their revenue is going to go up as more rich people go back to Paris.
Well, this is what the traders on the market, in the marketplace, the people who move markets quickly, are scared. And they're scared about a couple of very specific things. One is, of course, the Europeans are going to dither and dather around as they have continued to do.
Wait a minute. They're afraid of that? That is the normal state of affairs in Europe. That's
On the 22nd,
4,000 years, they dither and dither around over there.
On the 22nd, there will be a big committee meet from the Eurozone, and they will determine whether or not they're going to authorize the European Central Bank to start quantitative easing.
Yeah, so they're about 6 years late.
But any one of them can veto it.
Yes.
And the Germans have historically vetoed it every time.
Yes, they would rather austerity than extra spending.
Now, there's another thing that people are, and obviously if Europe starts slipping into a severe recession, we export stuff to Europe and they wouldn't be able to buy it and that would be unhappy. And they owe us a lot of money. I know that sounds a little strange, but they do. Now, the other things...
So do the Russians.
That are very,
so do the Chinese.
Right, but this is very real. Venezuela, if the price of oil doesn't go up, and odds are, and by the way, the Saudis have suggested the price of oil might go to $20. And when they're talking down the price of oil that way, and they said they will keep pumping at $20. If the price of oil stays, and by the way, it dropped below $50... West Texas Intermediate was 48 something at the end of the week, and
the worldwide
Brent is like 50. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the worldwide market, they use Brent. We in the United States use our West Texas concepts because that's what we do here in the United States. Texas. Anyway, yes. So the Brent is what the rest of the world uses, and
but
they
still
drop below $50 a barrel.
And the issue is that Venezuela could very well default. And you say, okay, great. They don't like us. We don't like them.
Here's the problem.
The Venezuelans owe a lot of money to American banks.
Yes, they do.
And if they default, then those American banks have to write off the loans. And they're in a position where it will cut their profits dramatically, and that will make the stock traders unhappy. It would also make these banks unable to loan as much money as they would otherwise loan. Russia is in the same boat. Russia could easily default or start invading somebody. Again,
or both.
And then there's this would affect European and U.S. banks. Well, it gets a little worse. As deflation hits Europe, the money that is owed on loans to organizations and individuals in Europe that's denominated in dollars or even in euros is getting harder to pay. So we could see defaults there, too. That's what people are afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to talk more next hour on Venezuela because there are some interesting things happening there that have a tendency to make me a little bit nervous.
Kind of like Illinois.
Yeah, but a little bit more nervous even than Illinois.
Right.
Yes.
But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're going to have to break in just a moment for news, and we'll be back next hour with more of our totally mind-numbingly boring stuff.
Right.
But if you would like to contact us off the air and leave a message on voicemail or actually talk to a human being during the week, the local number is 947-1111.
You can reach that same voicemail or live person, depending on time of week, at toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and listen to podcasts. And
lower your IQ.
Lower your IQ, see our ugly mugs, and so on. Till next hour.
True. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.